Yeah, that's right.
That's right. Yeah, when you have a particular doctor father, if you're lucky, they treat you pretty well. But there are certain things they insist you say. Yeah, that's certain things. That's right. So. We are given it. Oh, I like that one. So. Okay, well, it is noon. The hour has struck. And we are doing Greek Club again here at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, Missouri, in the United States of America. And we are broadcasting today from Sunshine Tower because spring has sprung, the grass has riz. I wonder where the flowers is in St. Louis. And I'm happy to be running in shorts and a tank top again, which is clearly too much information. So having finished that here in Holy Wednesday of Holy Week, we are reading Hebrews 12. Today's Tuesday. I knew that. Holy Tuesday. That's right. Thank you very much for that mid-course correction. Yes, we finished chapter 11, finally, the by faith chapter, and we're starting the well-known hortatory chapter 12. So we'll just dive right in at verse 1. The first sentence actually is fairly long. It's 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 into the 8th line, but it's not too bad. So we'll just read. I think we'll read the whole sentence, and then we'll just pick it apart. So, toigar un kai hemes tas uton ekantas peri kemenon hemin nephas martyron. Unkan apathemenoi panta kai tein eoperistaton hamartean di hippomenes trekomen tan pra kemenon hemin agona. Maybe we'll stop there after all, since we finally got to the main verb. Now, toi gar un is one of those words that's a combination of three words, toi, gar, and un. And it means, you go to all the work to look it up, and it means, therefore, right? Yeah, so, therefore also, we, emphatic pronoun. Now we have a participle, of course, masculine plural nominative, we is the referent, having such kind or such a great. Now we need a noun to go with such a great. And by itself, tus uton could be masculine singular accusative, or it could be neuter singular accusative, or nominative for that matter. Let's see, maybe I'm going to hold on here.
Those intramural, wacky intramural captains.
All right. So if you're parsing along innocently, you might think that it's masculine singular accusative, but it's not, in fact, because the only noun it can go with is nephos. And if you're unaware, you might think that nephos is a masculine singular nominative noun, but of course it's an evil third declension noun like ethnos, where the declension goes ethnos, ethnus, ethne, ethnos. So this is simply the direct object of ekantes. So great a cloud, a nephos is a cloud, and the cloud is modified by the participle perikamenon, which is from perikamai, which means, not surprisingly, to lie around or surround, and witnesses, martyron. So, therefore, also we, having so great a cloud or such a great cloud, such a great surrounding to us of witnesses cloud. That would be the literalistic way to do it. The witnesses, the image as we get to the verb, let us run the race and so forth, is of a stadium or something like that. But to be honest, for my whole life, I sort of thought that the witnesses were witnessing us. But in light of the prior chapter, I'm not sure that's right. I think they're witnesses of Christ. So they're witnessing, their faith witnesses to the faithfulness of God in Christ. So they're not just looking at us, right? The cloud that's surrounding us are those who have witnessed to Christ. I think that makes better sense. And we'll take the participle as causal, because we have. And now another participle, quickly on its heels. We have an ankon is a burden or a bulk, something bulky. And it's normally translated weight. And apathemenon is the aorist participle from apatithemi, which means to set aside or to put away. So setting aside every ankon, every weight, and the sin. What kind of sin? You just look up the adjective, eoperistatos, and it means easily entangling. So hence the translation, the sin which easily entangles. And now finally you get to the main verb, through endurance, let us run, ton agona, the contest, or since you're running, the race. And we'll modify race by putting in attributive position, a participle. Now it's prokemai, which means to lie in front of, right? And often translated set before, and the verb takes the dative, set before us. Okay. So it's a familiar passage. We kind of already know what it's supposed to say, but that's kind of how the grammar works out. And that second participle, if the first participle, ekontes, might be causal, because we have this cloud of witnesses, the second one, apathemenoi, might be maybe expressing manner or means by, or maybe temporal, since it's aorist, after we have put aside or thrown off. I think sometimes it's translated. But the main exhortation is trekomen, which is from the verb treko, to run, and it's a present subjunctive, so-called hortatory subjunctive. Let us run through endurance. The race which has been set, which is lying in front of us. So, all right, questions, comments about verse 1. Yeah, Will?
Is that through endurance? It seems like it would be better by endurance.
I know.
So it's just flexible.
I think it's a flexibility of expression, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. Yeah, prepositions are obviously important for theology, but in any given context. In fact, we're about to hit a very interesting preposition, which is normally translated in an abnormal way. So, yeah, so. Good, all right? All right, verse 2. Now we've had let us run, and now we're going to get more dependent constructions, and then finally another main verb, which will finish off the sentence. So it's a compound sentence. So verse 2. Af horontes eis tan tes pisteos archegan kai teleotein jesun. Hus ante tes prakemenes auto karas hip emenon stauron aiskines kataphrenesas en dexia te tu thronu tu theu kekathiken. So we follow with another present sim participle. First word in verse 2 is from af horao. So it's a verb that means to see, and it's the lexicon suggests gaze intently or fix your eyes upon intently. So looking, and again, I wonder if the participles, the participle here might express the manner or the means. You run the race by looking intently unto the of faith beginner and finisher. I might want to translate it that way. An archegos is a leader or an initiator, an originator. And teleotes, of course, is a completer. We see the root of tel and teleao and so forth. So by looking unto the, as the common translation says, author and perfecter of faith. And in that sense, faith would probably be an objective genitive, the one who began faith, the one who perfects faith. And then in apposition, the personal name, Jesus, which is a little unusual. It kind of starkly stands there and kind of reminds me, at least, that in Hebrews you have among both the highest, if I could say it this way, among the highest and the lowest Christology in the New Testament. I mean, it's in Hebrews that Jesus is the exact representation of God's likeness, and the one who learned obedience in that he suffered. See, so it's an interesting combination of high and low, if I can use those terms without meaning them to be negative or positive, but just descriptive. So, looking unto this one, namely Jesus, and now we have a relative clause, and here's the unusual preposition, actually, Will, that I mentioned before. Who? Now, of course, anti plus a genitive normally expresses substitution or replacement, right? This is the same preposition you probably remember. The Son of Man came to give his life as a ransom payment in the place of the many, right? But one of the meanings, a minority meaning, which the lexica, both Liddell and Scott and BDAG mentioned, is causal, because of. See? And that's the way it's often translated here, at least that's the way I've always heard it, who for the lying in front of him joy, or lying forward to him joy, who for the joy set before him, right? But you know what? It makes, and it would actually change the meaning of the verse, it also makes good sense to take anti plus the genitive in its normal sense, that is to say, in place of. In other words, if that's the case, the theology would be more like that of Philippians 2, where Jesus had equality with God, but he didn't grasp it, rather he voluntarily emptied himself. See the difference? In the one case, it's Jesus is looking past the cross and saying, oh, that's the joy that's lying in front of me, right? So because of that joy, presumably accomplishing the salvation of the world, he endures the cross. The other one is, look, in some sense, yeah, Christologically, I'm good, right? I mean, I have all the joy and the perfection that I need, but I'm going to replace that with enduring the cross. So it actually does change the meaning of the verse. Both of them would be orthodox Christian meanings, if I could say it that way. And for the life of me, I don't know why the standard translation is the more rare use of this preposition. I mean, it makes sense and it's possible, but and I've looked at a few commentaries. I don't know why that's the preferred meaning when, as you're reading along, I think you would normally translate who in place of the joy that was lying in front of him. To be honest, I don't know. Maybe it's the image of running transferred to Christ and the joy has to be something that he doesn't have yet, or maybe that's the reason why. Again, either way is possible. But the main verb is then endured, hip emenon, which is just the aorist of this liquid stem verb, hipomeno. Endured the cross. And now we have... If you're just tracking along in a linear fashion, you might translate, he endured the cross of shame, which would work, right? But then the participle kataphrenesos, which is from kataphreneo, which means to despise, then it doesn't have an object. And kataphreneo takes a genitive case object. So normally the participle, the genitive aiskines is taken with the participle. He endured the cross... maybe because he had despised the shame. He looked the shame in the eye and he said, I despise you. And because of that, like in the garden, he was willing and went to the cross. And then we have te, we'll finish off the verse, which is post-positive. And so for... Not yet, actually. We want to put te in front of endexia.
Okay.
So that means that te is linking endured with has sat, those two main verbs, if that makes sense. So put te in front of en. So after despising the shame, he endured the cross after or because he despised the shame, and, that's te, at the right hand of God's throne, kekathikon, which is, again, kind of a picture perfect. Well, that was a joke. I didn't even intend it. A picture-perfect, perfect form with the duplicated stem and the kappa on the end. So from kathizo, which means to sit, right? So, all right. So here Christ serves as the visual inspiration and motivation for running the race through endurance. Okay. Good. Anything on verse 2? That wasn't too bad. You know, you got participles flying all over the place, but that's not...
kata from nesas, is that a genitive and
absolute? No, that kata from nesas is... Yeah, it's just masculine singular nominative, right, right. And the referent is Jesus, right, the he of he endured, right, 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 right. What would it be? It would be... kata phrenes, it goes sasantas. It would be kata phrenesantas, right? And again, I know that because I taught fall Greek, and I had to hesitate because I taught Greek in the fall, not in the winter. It's getting a little rusty. So good. Okay. Other questions about verse 2? All right. So it's hortatory. Hebrews is all about hortatory subjunctives, right? Verse 3. Analogisasta gar ton toi autain hippa menekata hippa ton hamartolon ace helton antilagion. Hina me kameta tais psikais humon ek luominoi. Analogizomai means to consider or reckon with, think about intently. The lexicon said it was a middle deponent. And this would be the aorist imperative, middle, second person plural, for consider. Now, who shall we consider? Ton, and you have to parse carefully, because if you're just tracking again in a linear fashion, you might think that toi autain goes with ton hippa mene kata. That's a perfect participle active. Masculine singular accusative from hippomeno again. But toi autain is feminine singular accusative. And so you have to put it on hold, if you will. It's almost as bad as German, where you're reading a sentence and you get like D, D, D in a row, and you got to hold off on the D's until you get to the das and the der and all that jazz. Not that I'm criticizing the German language. Right? For consider... the one who has endured, so there's the participle, Christ is ton hippa mene kata, the one who has endured, and what has he endured? End of the line, rebellion, resistance, opposition, right? Antilagia. And toi autain actually has to modify antilagia. Now, why is toi autain in the position where it is? Answer, because it's a fallen creation. That's why. I have no idea why this would rhetorically be helpful. But it actually has to. It's feminine singular accusative. Such opposition. So, and the opposition was by sinners, and it was ace auton. And this is a good example of how ace plus the accusative can mean against. Right? That's one of the meanings that the lexicon gives. So, for consider the one who has endured such opposition by sinners against himself. Why? In order that you may not komno. This is the aorist subjunctive from komno. It means to become weary. And in fact, it's a fairly close synonym to ek luo, and especially ek luo mai, which means to wear out. And so we actually have kind of two verbs that are somewhat synonymous. I was trying to figure out what to do with the force of the participle there. Ekluomenoi is a present participle middle, masculine plural nominative. The referent is the implied you of you grow weary, kameta. And to be honest, it's not a common force for participles in the New Testament, but participles can express result. And I wondered if that might be a way to translate it. So that you may not grow weary with respect to your lives, and so wear out. That actually made sense to me. Whether or not it's precisely what the writer has in mind, I'm not entirely sure. So, but I like this, and it's a good reminder actually, because we just had Dr. Weiss and I just had a very fine certification interview with a student, and we were talking about worship, Christian worship, in the office of the Word, and I suggested to him that this This now, I wonder if this noun in Ephesians 4 might better be translated. I mean, it's not like equipping or equipment is wrong, but I wonder if the office of the word, that is, apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers, is not for the equipping of the saints so much as the restoration of the saints. Because equipping kind of sounds like, oh yeah, I'm good to go, just give me some tools. Whereas restoration, I think, is a larger concept. And of course, the noun there can be used in that sense in different contexts. And it's also the cognate to the verb which the disciples are doing when Jesus calls them. They're restoring their nets. They're fixing them up. They're patching them up, getting them ready so they can be flung out into the water again. So I don't think you don't lose the sense of equipping, but restoration is a larger concept. And I find that actually a very helpful thing. And the writer to the Hebrews knows that this is what happens to believers. That is, they get weary. You know, they're in danger of actually giving up, right? And I think that's not a bad way to think about the congregation gathered at worship. I mean, there will be believers there every Sunday who feel like giving up, right? And the job is to restore them, right? Which, of course, is good because it's only a job that Christ can do. So, but forgive me for wandering into practical matters there for just a second. This is Greek Club, where we try not to have any connection with reality. Any questions about verse 3? Okay, it was not too bad. Yeah, this Greek isn't so hard. I think like the writer to the Hebrews was getting tired or something, and he just wore out stylistically. Verse 4. Upo mekris haimatas anti katesteta prostein hamartian ant agonidzamenoi. Not yet, and I sort of in my head instinctively translated for. And I thought, oh wait, it's not there. And then I saw the flag on the play, and of course in the manuscript tradition, after upo is gar, right? So maybe that's the sense. For not yet until blood. Now, anti katesteta. Can somebody tell me maybe what the dictionary form of that would be? It's a compound form of histemi. Exactly, very good. It's from anti kathistemi, which is very long, and you look it up, and it means resist, right? And this would be the estain. This would be the strong aorist. Which would be intransitive. So you have not yet resisted. You did not yet resist until blood. Ant agonizamenoi. As you struggle, prostein hamartion, with sin. Okay? Ant agonizo. You know, I can't remember if this is deponent or not. But if it's not, it may very well have some sort of a middle force as you struggle with respect to yourselves against sin. And the writer says in verse 5, you've forgotten something. So let's see. Yeah, so verse 4 is easy, very short, has one main verb and a dependent participle at the end. And so maybe then we'll just do one more minute. We'll catch verse 5. Well, 5 and 6 is not too hard. So, kai ek leleste tes paraklesios hetes hemin hos huiois dialegetai. Huiamu me allegore paideas kiriu me de ek liu hip autu ek lengkamenas. Elengkamenas. Hungar agapa kyrios paidue. Mastigoi de panta huian han para dekatai. And, now, this was an interesting form. If I were a cruel person, I would ask you what this comes from. Does anybody have any idea? I had no idea. I had to search around until I found it. What do you think, Will? Got an idea? Ek le leste? It's from... No, good guess. Yeah, I was looking for ek leo, ek luo, ek labo, whatever. It's from ek lanthanomai, which really made me happy that I finally found it. And it means utterly forget, right? And you forgot You have forgotten. It's a perfect form. See the duplicated stem. You have forgotten, in the genitive, the exhortation which, this is just the feminine singular nominative of hustis, which to you as to sons speaks, dialegomai. And here's the exhortation from Proverbs. Huyamu, vocative, my son. Alegoreo means to think little of. And so this is, because it's an epsilon contract verb, this is a present indicative, present imperative active, second singular, right? You forgot, you are forgetting the paideia of the Lord, the Lord's training. Do not think little of the Lord's training, nor, now we have ekluomai again, this is another imperative, this is middle deponent, nor grow weary as you are being convicted or reproved or rebuked or something like that by him. Why? Because whom the Lord loves, he trains. And this doesn't sound real happy. He whips, he scourges every son whom he receives. Right? Now, of course, there's lots of theology in here, and we could talk about that, but it's time to stop. So the Greek isn't all that hard, as the writer quotes Proverbs chapter 3. So rejoice, the Lord is whipping you. That would be overstating the case, but we'll stop here. And a blessed Holy Week here on Holy Tuesday. And even though I know I'm not allowed to say this, Christ is risen. Indeed.
Say that? It's Lent, man. You're not supposed to say that.